Hello again, and welcome to another episode of No Prize Podcast. I am your professor, Bud Young, and with me, as always, is a bamfing Bob Anderegg. How are you, Bob?
I'm bamfing, as always. So glad to be here with y'all.
Excellent. And again with me, with us, again, is Johnny the Machine Hughes. How are you, Johnny?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Getting prepared for some snow here, so...
You know, this month of weather here in New England has been crazy. With February, it's in the 70s.
It's all over the place, isn't it? Because I'm in the Midwest, and last week it was up into the 60s, and then it was in the 30s, and now it's back up into the 60s again. So I don't know what to expect when I walk out the door.
Yeah, it's up and down. It's like the weather can't decide what it wants to do, much like Marvel Comics.
But we'll get into that.
Right. So let's jump in. We're going to talk about two books today, and then we're going to have a discussion. So we're talking about the Infinity Prelude there. What the hell is it even called now?
Infinity Countdown Prime.
Oh, okay, Infinity Countdown. Okay, so they're stealing the name from DC as well. Countdown. Infinity Countdown Prime, let's start with that. So... Now, this was a continuation from the primer issue we got a couple of weeks ago with Adam Warlock, and this book is basically setting the stage, right? So we're setting the stage on the Infinity Stones, setting the stage on where they are in Marvel and who has them, and well, let's start with you, Bob. What did you think of the issue?
Well, it is very different than what we had with Adam Warlock, because that was... You know, by Mike Allred, and it was a great comic. But this one, it's setting us up for the new big event that is going to be taking place. And what I personally loved about it is we've had a lot of teasing with Wolverine coming up. He's popping up in different places, doing different things. And this is the first time we actually see like the Logan Wolverine, not the old man version. Doing his thing, but he's not trying to join any teams. He's just on the run. And it's revealed that the reason he can get around so well is because he actually has his hands on the Space Stone. And this comic essentially just sets up the whereabouts of all the different Infinity Stones across the Marvel Universe and who's vying to get them and who's protecting them and all the different powers that are going to come together to see who can catch them all, like Pokemon. It really is a collection of a lot of villains. You have Loki, you have Ultron / Hank Pym, you have I can't remember them all, but there's like four or five different villains that are all trying to get their hands on Infinity Stones at the exact same time. And
Thanos Magus.
Yeah, and
Super Skrull.
Yeah.
And I think what's his name? The low level defender guy.
Turk.
Not yeah. But it's a really great comic, and it kinda sets up, because we've been seeing solicits come out in the last week about what's going to be happening in May, but even in the Infinity Countdown comics that are going to be coming out for this event, we get lead up for what's going to be happening in the coming months with Darkhawk and, the Guardians of the Galaxy and everything else. But overall, I was really impressed with this comic, and it makes me excited to see what comes next. I've never really been an Infinity Stones kind of guy, but seeing all the different pieces come together, I'm really excited about. What about you, Johnny? I know that you've had some Infinity Stones experience in the past.
It's been a while since I've crusaded with Infinity Stones, I guess. I've got to say that I really quite enjoyed the issue for what it was. It should be called Primer rather than Prime, because although there are lots of adverts for what is going to happen in the shape of the who has what and which stones where and so on and so forth, not a lot generally happens with the plot. There are some really cool moments in there. Logan Bamfing, for one thing,
is my new profile picture now.
Which kind of made me, I thought of you as soon as I saw it. I was like, really?
Yep.
Story wise, It is what it is. It's a taster. It's a setup book. And I've got no problem with that whatsoever in any shape, way, or form. I was looking forward to looking at Mike Deodato's artwork, which I haven't seen for quite some time. And then, unfortunately, I was left a little bit disappointed. I thought his perspective was a little bit off, how Wolverine seems to be so short. And I know he's a short character, so don't get on my back about that. But it's kind of like he's got really long arms at times, and then he's got really shortened arms, and then his claws seem longer than his forearm. I'm thinking, what's going on? How's that work? Because it's supposed to be. And he seems a little bit compressed. And then one of the things that Deodato was famous for was drawing, you know, women and so on. And then there's a big spread of Carol Danvers. And I've got to say, facially, it doesn't look like any Danvers that I've seen ever before. And then there's something wonky going on with her left foot, which is just odd. But it kind of distorted my eye a little bit. Story-wise, I like the fact they're trying to tie in the different things and different threads to get people hooked. My problem, I guess, with this book is with what we know is about to happen, which we're going to discuss later. I don't understand. I think this book feels more like a lame duck book because it is just setting up for something that's already been released. And if I was a comic book fan and there was a choice between buying something new or something that's not going to matter in a few months' time, which one would you go for?
But the same could be said for the new the Avengers book that's out, No Surrender Right Now. Interesting story. It's fun to read and enjoy, but in the end you're like, well, is this all just going to blink into the non-canon and it's just going to reboot again? One thing I really, really did like about this comic, because it does go into the Hank Pym Ultron duality with the Soul Stone and everything, but at the end of the comic, I think in the last, you know, 5-10 pages or something, it goes through the entire abridged history of the Infinity Stones and what they've been through. And I really appreciated that because you guys, y'all read through Infinity War and everything, Infinity Countdown and everything else back when it was a big deal and it was new. I'm jumping into this as a new fan. The most Thanos I've seen has been on the big screen, and that's not been much. So this was really good for me as a newer fan, reading about the High Evolutionary, Adam Warlock, Magus, Thanos, and all of their backstory without having to read 100+ issues of Marvel Comics to catch up.
I totally get that, and I totally understand that for newer readers who haven't been around the Stones or Warlock or Thanos and all that sort of stuff, I totally buy into what you're saying, and I totally agree. It's a great way. It's a great little advert for what potential we're going to see out of the movie,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of my all-time bugbears from God knows when. I would like the comics to be separate from the movies. I don't think the comics should have to mirror what's going on in the movies. If the comics are the original source material, I think, well, you know, I get that more people will watch Infinity War then we'll probably read Infinity Countdown. And I guess Marvel Studios want that to happen. They want more money from that point of view than it is. I mean, over here it costs in the region between £9 and £12 to go and see a movie, where a comic book costs £2.30. So you work the maths out, which one would you rather make money off, right? So I get that that's the thing, but that's kind of like the comic industry itself, so it's not really aimed at Marvel.
What about you, Bud?
Well, so I'm going to tell you, I am a big fan of Mike Deodato's work, and I'm glad that you said something, Johnny, because it did seem like, I don't know if maybe it seemed rushed to me anyway. You're right, Logan is super short. And I'm looking at the picture now with his claws down to almost his ankles, and I'm just like, there's just no anatomical way that this can be possible. But as far as the story goes, I mean, I thought it was pretty disjointed. You know, there was this one scene with Wolverine and when Loki popped in and they have this chat and this, you know, this little thing when with it, which ended up with Wolverine bamfing away from Loki. But you know, they talked like they were like old buddies. And to my memory, I don't know if Loki and Wolverine ever actually met. And at least they weren't friendly. But the way that they were talking kind of threw me off a little bit. Like they like the exposition was, you know, we've spent a lot of time together and we know each other. So that to me kind of just threw me off a little bit. But for what it is, you know, trying to get like, you know, this is where all the stones are. Because I even think in the last podcast I was like, where are all these stones? You know, and that it's so weird that they're all in the randomest places, you know, like, I don't know, do you remember Captain Universe, Johnny?
I do. Yeah, I do, unfortunately.
So this is what it feels like to me, because the Captain Universe power was this random power that just hit random people, right?
Yeah,
and
totally.
And so now, so these stones, it feels to me like it's just almost random. And, you know, for them to give a stone to Turk, you know, and have to even have Turk even understand what the hell he has, you know, to me that seemed a little weird, because Turk is a really dumb, you know, he's kind of like the poster child for thugs in Daredevil and even in the Netflix shows, right? But here I just don't know.
I don't think Turk knows that it's a story. I think he just knows that it's giving him luck, and he's not using it for any other reason other than that. So he's kind of, I think he's probably been around enough weird crap in New York to know that there's something a bit squiffy going on. But
yeah,
other than that, I don't think it's anything. I think it's supposed to be a kind of... It's to accentuate the idea that the stones could be anywhere in anybody's power.
Mm-hmm. And the Guardians of the Galaxy have been talking about the Power Stone, which is essentially the size of a small mountain,
right,
and the Soul Stone, which Gamora has kind of been batting back and forth with. So I'm glad that they addressed at least the Guardians of the Galaxy in this, because I think that they're going to be heavily played into this event, because two of the six, they're the only ones that have really been talked about up to this point.
So there was one thing. So one thing that I like to say visually that I really liked was, I thought when they did the Captain Marvel and showed the Captain Marvels across the universes finding the stones, and having, you know, Monica Rambeau, Captain Marvel, and then Captain Marvel, and then having Captain
Shazam!
Marvel Jr. I thought that was
don't say it. Don't
I thought
you
that
dare.
I thought that was a cute little touch and like a tongue-in-cheek moment that I actually thought was really cool. And the other thing that I really liked was, and you guys know that I think Hank Pym is probably one of my favorite characters in Marvel. And for them to use him, and he's kind of been stuck in Ultron for the last couple of years now, but it looks to me like they're really going to kind of resolve that in Infinity Countdown, if not in whatever is coming up after this, whether or not it's Infinity War, which I imagine it probably is going to be. But Hank Pym ends up in the Soul Stone, correct? And then he runs into the old Gamora, which is weird that old Gamora is in the Soul Stone, because that means who's the Gamora that's running around in Guardians of the Galaxy?
It's only a shard of her, though. That's what she says at the...
She left a piece of it, okay. Yeah,
I always... I think it's very much like... have you seen Star Trek Generations? Where there's always a piece of somebody left in the Nexus. So they managed to save the Guinan character, but when Picard gets thrown in, he goes looking for Guinan to save him.
Or it's like it's a Horcrux and it's just a piece of her
soul
kind of stuck there.
I mean, it's not particularly new, but I think it's done really well if for people who are sort of like thinking, ooh, really? But I think as a plot device, I think it works reasonably well.
I think
well
in
enough.
Uncanny Avengers, Hank Pym really, like, I honestly thought that he was lost forever, and this was just Ultron using his husk, his skin suit, to make a point. But now I have hope for the character now. So here's to hoping. And I do like that. I'm not sure if any of y'all saw the solicits for May, but there is a book, I believe, that has all of the Captain Marvels in it. Monica, Lambeau, Mar-Vell,
yeah,
everybody. It's, so
it's the Captain Marvel Infinity Countdown.
Yeah. So we'll have a we'll have that little book for all of the classic Captain Marvel fans, and do not say Billy Batson's Shazam, because he may be Captain Marvel, but he ain't our Captain Marvel.
Well, he hasn't shown up in Rebirth, so maybe he can show up in Marvel.
Not yet.
So, so what do you guys overall think? Is this a flame on for everybody, or is this a clobber?
For me, it is. It's a flame on for me. I really enjoyed it.
I would like to also give it a flame on.
And I'm going to say it's a flame on, too, because you know why? I think Marvel does the first issues of big event books always kick ass. And you leave there leaving that book with like such high hopes for what's coming up. It's whether or not they can follow through.
Right. And I'm an X-Men guy. I've never really been a Wolverine fan, per se. But after having so much lead up and so much stuff, and it makes sense that Logan would be showing up at the most random places in these flashbacks, these one page backup panels on comic books, because he has the Space Stone and now he can just kind of hop around. So that part at least makes sense, and I'm just glad to see him. But we have like 5 Wolverines right now, so it's like, we'll see. But I did like seeing him in his element. That was a big plus for me.
All right, so let's move on to Doctor Strange Damnation number 1, and this was a direct continuation of the last issue of Doctor Strange, where just to kind of set it up, because I don't know if anybody read the last issue of Doctor Strange, but
yes.
Loki restored magic to Earth. Or to the universe, and gave relinquished the Sorcerer Supreme back to Stephen Strange for the moment, anyway. But then this continuation directly from that issue, and also from the end of Civil War II. What was the last crossover? My crossovers are mixing up in me.
Secret Empire.
Secret Empire. How can I forget Secret Empire?
With the other events happening, that's how. But we'll go with that.
Everything bleeds together. So Las Vegas ends up destroyed in the Secret Empire, and this is how this book opens: is them the heroes trying to find survivors and trying to restore Las Vegas, and then Doctor Strange shows up and. Using his magic, restores the city, which confused the heck out of me, because even though Loki restored magic to the universe, I had no idea Doctor Strange was strong enough to, A, put a city back where it had previously been, and B, resurrect every single soul that was in the city, so that the loss of life was effectively zero.
He basically Leroy Jenkins his way into there. And all the Avengers are like, what the hell are you doing? What's going on? And
right.
Doctor Strange is like, no, I've got this. And
So this ends up being a little weird for me, but the payoff comes when a big spire comes up from the middle of Las Vegas, and it turns out to be like this casino run by Mephisto, which is really pretty cool. But that's the payoff, right? I mean, Doctor Strange resurrects people from hell, because of course everybody in Las Vegas went to hell, right?
You would think, yeah, for the most part.
And so now Mephisto runs it. So hey, there's your setup for Damnation, right? I thought
for the most part, yeah.
I thought it was pretty cool, for a book, a crossover that is touting separate books for Ghost Rider and Blade and other more of the supernatural heroes. This book this book squarely starred Avengers characters. You know, Falcon, Thor, and others. So,
and others.
Yeah. Yeah. Hawkeye, Black Panther. Yeah, you know, Captain Marvel. Hey,
check it out. Black Panther's made another appearance.
Hey, that's shocking. Shocking.
Oh, yes, that's right. Infinity Countdown. That's probably the only book that he's not been in this month.
Right. So,
for me, this issue was really good because, I mean, obviously the Avengers and things would be there trying to console because they were at the forefront of what happened in Secret Empire, and they feel responsible for what's happening. But I love the idea of Sin City being a literal Sin City. And it really makes me mad because some of you may know, but I'm working on a series of books, and I've played with the idea of Sin City turning into a battleground for a holy war between demons and angels because it's Sin City. And I'm just like, well, it's obvious, but it's done so well here, I can't even be mad. It's like it's not an original idea, but it is well done here. So we give them that. But I really like a lot of these paranormal characters, the ones that deal with, you know, hell and the really dark stuff. So you have Blade, Man-Thing, Moon Knight, like we said. You have Elsa Bloodstone and Dr. Voodoo and Iron Fist. And they even threw in Ben Reilly, the Scarlet Spider, because he's in Las Vegas right now. And they're just like, why the hell not? But the idea of damnation and Mephisto trying to claim the souls of the people who came back to life, I think that's a damn good story waiting to happen.
Yeah, well, and like I said, we just got to see how it comes off in the end, because it was a strong first issue, and you know, once they kind of get away from the Avengers characters and start saying, okay, so what do we do with Brother Voodoo and Man-Thing? And you know, make them interesting. You know, that's my big challenge, I think, in this whole crossover, because, you know, as much hype as Blade gets, I don't really think he's that interesting of a character, and I don't know if you know, I don't know if he could carry a book, let alone a limited series. So I don't know.
But I love Moon Knight. I love Iron Fist. I think those are going to be – those two and Doctor Strange are going to be your big names in this, because Ghost Rider has a big cult following, so does Blade, and the others are kind of lost to the wayside. But, yeah, Moon Knight I'm really excited for, because normally he's kind of one of those ground-level characters, and I hope that he actually has a really big role in this alongside some of these other minor characters.
Like Iron Fist starring in this crossover right before his book gets canceled.
Hey, they have to get him out there for season 2 on Netflix or whatever the hell they're doing.
Oh yeah, well I don't know. Season 2 on Netflix probably isn't coming until next year, so they can make him disappear for a while.
Yeah, then they can reboot him as something else and then unreboot it and then reboot it again.
Johnny, what did you think of Doctor Strange Damnation?
I have to say that I quite enjoyed it. I laughed along when I'm supposed to laugh. There is, as Banff says, a certain logic about Sin City being full of sin. It kind of goes with the territory, I guess. I have to say that I did not realize it was a crossover of such magnitude, to the point where one of the things that I didn't like about it is the fact it crosses over into so many different books. It kind of, stuff like that really gets my goat as a collector, because I don't read every single thing that comes out there, and I don't want to read every single book. Should it involve other characters? Yes. I kind of knew Ghost Rider would be turning up when Mephisto turns the Avengers into flame heads themselves. The script works, the dialogue works, the art works. It's just that crossover element, you know, because, I mean, I've come from a time, there is nothing you can do that will make Ben Reilly readable to me. Not a single
amen
to
that.
All right?
I don't even know why it's still getting printed out, man. Spider-Gwen.
Ben Reilly is, to Marvel, what Jason Todd is to DC. An absolutely waste of an opportunity. You know, Jason Todd, better off dead. Ben Reilly shouldn't even come back. unbelievable the amount of grief that idea of that character has caused over time. There is nothing you can do that's going to make me buy that book. You could put fishnets in it, you could put black cat in fishnets in it, and I'm still not going to pick up that book. It's that bad, you know, as a character. I like some of the Midnight Suns characters that are on show here, which harkens back to, I guess, my age when I'm saying Midnight Suns. I expected more Ghost Rider after reading Marvel Legacy number one, because he had such sort of like a prominence in that first book.
But that was the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider, not the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider.
Is this Johnny Blaze?
This is the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider.
This is Johnny Blaze, right.
Well, how many different versions of the same Vengeance Demon can exist at the same time?
Two or three.
Well, look at the last page of this issue and tell me.
I think that I was hoping that was just affectation rather than it can't all be Zarathos's, because I mean Zarathos is just like one demon, right?
Well, I think they did a story years ago that the demon that was in Johnny Blaze that was Zarathos was not the same demon that was in Robbie Reyes. That's not the same. Yeah, it's like a different demon.
All right,
but
okay.
They're all in the same wheelhouse. But this comic, I really liked some of the things. Like they had some old, it looked like black and white movie strip reels on one page where they're going through a background. I've never seen a background done that way, and that was really fun. Also, the idea of the currency being souls, because there's a big vault of the souls that got liberated from hell, and that was a really nice imagery that they had, but this whole issue just kind of, it built up. This is what I wanted out of Spirits of Vengeance. Because I was let down by that. I wasn't a huge fan of Spirits of Vengeance the way that it was presented to us. But the way Damnation is playing off, I'm like, okay, this is a story that I can get on board with. This is something that appeals to me as a reader versus just, let's have Satana and Damon Hellstrom just go fucking shit up, you know?
Right.
I mean, I like the book. I thought that's my head in. But that's, again, that's not just a Marvel thing. I hate it when I read a regular book, whatever it may be, and then all of a sudden it crosses over into a book that I don't read. I am not that person that the comic books are marketed for, because if I think you can't tell the story in the books featuring the characters that I buy in that character's book, I'm not going to go looking for them elsewhere.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem like the recent Avengers Champions crossover. Like if that was good. If the Champions are showing up in the Avengers book and it organically crosses over into a Champions book that has the Avengers guest starring in it, I really don't have a problem with it. But if it's kind of like a loose tie-in where, I mean, we've seen loose tie-ins before where I'm thinking Inferno from like 30 years ago. But right. So if you think some of those characters, some of those like issues like New Mutants, where the only crossover was like a mailbox, the postman, and it was like, okay, so that really wasn't a crossover. But you know, for a book that if it's like a four parter, like a month long crossover, with each of the characters from those books crossing over into the other characters' books, and it's one big story in the end, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, because didn't they say just a little while back that Secret Empire was going to be the last event that happens for, like, years? Like, didn't they tout that, like, oh, no, we're done with events. Events are over, and da-da-da-da.
Right.
Because this kind of goes into our big discussion at the end here.
Right.
But
so let's transition into that, but let's find out if we all think that this is a flame on, right?
Oh, yeah. But, well, unironically, flame on.
Yes.
Zarathos on.
Yep, flame on, skulls to the ceiling on this one. This is good. Go check it out.
Yeah, hellish. But
to be fair, anything that's got a character name called Johnny, it's got to be good, right?
Oh, yeah.
I like the way Bam's not convinced by that logic at all.
So, Johnny, maybe you can explain this to me. How come Johnny Blaze and Johnny Storm both have fire powers?
Well, because Johnny Blaze doesn't have fire powers, does he? He's got a demon inside him.
But you know, Flaming Skull.
Well, to be fair, Johnny Storm's flaming all over. It's not just his head that's on fire. He's not a matchstick.
No, the correct answer is because Johnnies are hot. And then you just leave it at that.
Oh, yeah, what he said.
There you go. There you go.
Well, that's just why. I mean,
high fives for Bump.
Hey.
So let's so we're going to transition into this discussion that we're going to have on this podcast now about Marvel's recent announcement of their Fresh Start initiative. I got that right? The Fresh Start. Okay,
whatever
so
it is.
So they announced that in coming in May they are coming out with it, new first issues for Avengers, Black Panther, and Venom. And of course, for those of you that listen to the podcast or read Marvel, we just did a legacy event where we went back to original numbering, and we're still what three months into legacy or 4 months?
Yeah, 3 months.
But okay, so I mean, it does. I guess what matters is that we are still in single digits when it comes to how many issues we're out from the last big change. So. Now they did come out afterwards, maybe right before the fans started being in an uproar over this, but they did come back out and say that they're going to be using a dual numbering system. So even though that it's a new number one, it's still going to have the legacy numbering somewhere on the cover.
That does not sound confusing at all.
Right, it's like Daredevil number 2/603. Like, how is that not confusing as hell for everybody else?
And where do you file it? Does that go like after the like the last issue, or because it's number two, does it go right back to the front? What do you do? Oh man, I need to get some boxes.
You put it in the quarter bin.
I thought my comic list was confusing right now because I had to put, you know, such and such Uncanny Avengers Volume 1 and Volume 2 and Volume 3, and I'm gonna have to go back to Volume 1, but it's just a real mess. Just the whole thing is a mess. And honestly, I really enjoy that they're trying to bring in new people. But you remember back in the day, they just said great jumping on point for, and it didn't have to be across the board.
Oh.
You know, you could have a different jumping on point on X-Men than you could have for your Fantastic Four or your Avengers. But they all worked.
Yeah, they said that too. They said this is a great jumping on point. I was like rolling my eyes because I've said this a million times, is a great jumping on point for someone is also a great jumping off point for a former fan. So, you know, that is the thing that bugs me about this, because what this tells me is that Marvel is just not confident in their direction. They're not confident in their leadership. They don't know what the fans want, and they just are trying to throw shit against the wall, trying to please shareholders for Disney, Marvel, because new number one sell. Right, and probably issue number 672 doesn't sell, so they need to put a number one out at least twice a year. You need to have a new number one of your flagship book. So you need to relaunch X-Men every 6 months. You need to relaunch Avengers. In this case, what I say is, why don't they just, after every six-part story, because you're packaging your storyline 6 issues long, no matter how stupid the idea is, it's 6 issues. You put it together, you're going to put a trade together for it. Why not just have an ongoing series of limited series? Don't give it, you know, you give it issue number 1 through 6, give it the overall story a title that you're going to do the trade, and then just send out an issue every month or every twice a month or whatever your schedule is. But don't try to fool the fans, or don't try to sucker them into coming back in to you know, we're going to get the old school fans back, and we're going to sell issue number 800 of Spider-Man. You know, give Dan Slott a swan song, and then, you know, probably in July we're going to be coming out with a new Spider-Man number one. You know, that's bullshit to the fans. It's a slap in the face, because there were a lot of fans that kind of thought that Marvel got back in the good graces of a lot of people that were upset over the constant rebooting. And that, to me, is just it's a travesty. I don't know what Marvel's thinking. I really don't. Someone help me.
I think Marvel, I don't think they know where their fan base is. And I don't think they know who their fan base is. Is it the moviegoer? Is it the old guys who've been around like you and I, Professor? Is it the new reader or the newer reader like Banff? Who knows? The problem for me is jumping on points. I'm old school, as I've said before. If I want to get into a comic book, I will pick up whichever comic is on the rack. And if it's part three of a six-part series, I'll just catch up on my own. I'll work out what's going on, and then I'll go back. Make sense? I don't need categorically this. You must read this to understand what's going to go on moving forward. That's bullshit. It's comic books. You know, you can pick up an Avengers book, and there's enough going on. There should be enough about it that you know. Oh, yeah, well, I like the action, so that's good. So I'll pick up the next one. All right, now I get the arc. All right, now there's ramifications. You know what? I'm going to go back and get the last one. You know, it's what you do. We're collectors. We go and buy the book. We don't need constant reboots and resets of everything. And it's not just a Marvel thing, so let's get that out in the open. But at least when the Distinguished Competition have done it, it's kind of... They had their Flashpoint moment, they did their New 52, they've had the rebirth, and then they've gone back and actually used New 52 as part of the story of Rebirth. It's become part of that whole thing, so it's more inclusive. Where this, it's really hard to know where the line is between different events, and therefore, if I pick up an Avengers book... I don't know, say 672 or whatever, then 672. Is that before Legacy or is that after Legacy? Is it this? Is it that? What's going on? There's a lot of stuff you've got to work out before you can even enjoy the book, rather than being just like one continuous, tapestry of stories. And that's the thing that's off-putting. Not the fact that you don't get on with the story, but just the fact of where it fits in their universe. Well, yeah, go.
Right, because you were talking about, you know, how I'm kind of the newer... And I want to let you know that I am a fan of number ones. I like number ones because I'm like, oh, okay, this is something new. This is something I can jump onto. I enjoy reading number ones. However, if there's a story going on, there's nothing I hate more than for them to just say, well, we're over. Number one again. Wrap it up. Like, no, I've invested in this. Now, if it's something I've never heard of or it's a new, you know, an indie book or something, like I'm not talking Marvel DC – but if there is a new book and a new concept coming out, then I definitely want to pick up that number one. But I don't want to pick up Mosaic number one, volume three. You know, I picked up Mosaic number one because he was a new original character. And if you want to continue that story, you just continue with the original numbering. I am a fan of that. Now, as far as jumping on and trying to back up, the trades have been really revolutionary for our generation because... The trades, they let you know when the story ended. So, for instance, you know, we're reading Moon Knight. Moon Knight's had, you know, however many issues, right? I pick one up off the rack, but I also see that there's a trade there that ended on issue 12, and I'm picking up issue 15. I know there are two issues before the one I'm holding right now that if I want to start this arc, I have to go there. And I remember back in the day, I'm not so new that I haven't read back issues. I remember there were almost all comics were either one shots or two issues. Days of Future Past, two issues. A full story, a good story, two whole issues, and they made a movie about that thing.
Yep.
Tried anyway. They tried.
Well, my only other point, if I may interject slightly, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Thank you. Because of the industry as it is, because of the comic industry and how it is when it's 2 months in advance of everything, there are no surprises anymore.
Mm-mm.
Would you agree?
Absolutely agree. I know what's going to happen at the end of this event before
exactly.
It's even halfway through.
Right.
Exactly. So we're now in the stage where everything feels like a lame duck. It doesn't matter. If you're halfway through a storyline of your favorite character, whether it be Daredevil, Jessica Jones, whomever it may be, you know that no matter what happens between now and the restart or the fresh start, there's no consequence. Now, already the fact there's no consequence in our characters' lives is one of the knocks against comic books, because pretty much everybody stays the same with a few tweaks here and there. Now, if you've got something going on that you think is massively revolutionary for that character, and then you know that there's not the impact of whatever they're going through is going to get minimized because the whole universe gets a restart, then how does that make you feel about those characters and the time that you've spent in them? See where I'm coming from?
Yeah, is Valerie Vector going to even be here in 2 or 3 months after No Surrender? I don't know. And it makes me not care about what's happening with this new character they introduced, because I don't even know if it's going to be relevant in 2 months.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me go back to what Johnny had mentioned earlier about ramifications. That's what we're missing, is ramifications from anything that anybody does 3 months from now. That's the thing that is really kind of irritating me. So I can pick up this Avengers storyline that we're all reading, Avengers No Surrender, and I know that in 2 months when Avengers number one comes out, not one member of the current team that's in this storyline right now is going to be on the new Avengers team coming out in May. So what's my incentive to read this book? Just to find out why they're going to get kicked out?
Absolutely. See, this is, I mean, I've gone through this more times than enough with across the board, not just with Marvel, but with other companies, where they do something drastic, like paint themselves into a corner, characters finding out secret identities, other characters taking on board the mantle of the hero, all that sort of stuff. And you think, you know what, as a knee-jerk, oh my God, I can't believe it, it works very much like that whole number one, because it's like, oh wow, this is so new. But then they get themselves in the corner and they think, well, what's going to happen? All right, you know what? That's right, they're restarting the universe in 2 months' time. So really, whatever happens. Peter Parker could get killed within the next 2 months. And by May, he'll be back. Already, the Hulk is coming back. And you think to yourself, killing the Hulk and having an Avenger do it was probably one of the biggest shocks. Was it last year that happened? Biggest shocks last year.
Might have been a year and a half ago.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
My apologies. So when it happened, you're like, whoa. You know, that, because you don't expect the Hulk to buy it. And on top of that, you don't expect it to be Hawkeye that did the deed.
Right.
And that had massive, clever, interpersonal ramifications across the Marvel Universe, rather than this whole event-driven, let's restart, because you know what? The movie's going to change everything. The idea against the Infinity War is that everyone's going to get restarted at that point. We might have new cast playing Captain America and all that sort of stuff. This is the forced synergy between the comic book market and the movie market. And I don't know.
Right.
I think Lady Thor is a great character. I enjoy Lady Thor. I enjoy Lady Thor a lot more than I enjoy Thor Odinson.
Yeah,
right.
No,
but we know from solicits that Lady Thor is not going to be Thor in the new Avengers. It's going to be Odinson.
Exactly.
Because Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness are on it. And there's a lot of good people on that team. I really like seeing Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider there. I love seeing like classic She-Hulk on that cover. If you haven't had a chance to check that out, it's a really fun cover, and I'm excited for the book. But where does that leave us with the other characters that just get, you know, kind of burned at the stake?
I also noticed this week that when I saw the first adverts for the characters, I was happy because I was like, oh, check it out, Spider-Woman's in there. And then when I looked again today to do my research for today's pod, it's Jessica Jones, thanks to a color job, and the mask's coming off, like the glasses. So I'm like, are you saying that you're not going to use Spider-Woman? Are you saying she's not one of your major characters now? When you look back across the characters that are in there, the ones that were prominent are the people who've got the massive film deals. There's an Ant-Man and Wasp right there. There's Spider-Man, which you'd expect, because Spider-Man, love him or hate him, is pretty much the
face
of Marvel.
He's Spider-Man. He's always going to be at the front center.
Yeah, of course he is, because he's the face of Marvel Comics for everybody. But I don't know. To say it's a fresh start and it's new talent and it's all this, but having the trinity of Tony Stark, Thor, Odinson, Steve Rogers as Captain America. They did that after they did Avengers Disassembled, when they assembled them again. It was the same deal. So, I don't know. I just want something.
No.
If you want to make it fresh, make it fresh.
It's like they're trying to sell us on new directions and new creative teams. And that's the thing that bugs me, is that, yeah, I'm all for getting a new writer, on Spider-Man. Dan Slott was there for 10 years. Great job. Let's move on. Let's have someone new in there. Moving Ta-Nehisi Coates to Captain America, I think, is going to be great, which they're also relaunching with a new issue one on the 4th of July this year. I don't know if you even read that, because that wasn't in the original announcements. But, that...
But Mark Waid has been killing Captain America.
Right.
Why do you have to take Mark Waid off Captain America?
Right.
His Black Widow run was great.
Right. Why, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So why are you taking a guy... Mark Waid was doing a really good job on Cap. And, but the thing is I think that when he was announced as the new writer on Captain America, we all knew that he was a fill-in, because I think the announcement for Coates on Captain America came months ago, and then that they just didn't follow through on that until now. But,
right. And now Samnee and Walker are leaving Marvel altogether. So it's like we're seeing change-ups all across the board. And, I mean, I think Donny Cates can do no wrong. I'm a huge fan of Donny Cates, and he's going to be on Venom, and I'm really excited for that, even though I'm not a Venom fan. But seeing all these new change-ups happen in such short succession after doing Legacy, I'm put out with it. Like, I love Marvel, and I love it, but they said they were not going to do events anymore. And even now we have Infinity going on, Infinity Prime. We have Damnation. We've had a couple of mini events, and I don't count those. Those crossovers I'm fine with. I'm cool with small crossovers. It's these big, overarchy, 12-issue and tie-in behemoth things that really burst my bubble as far as the events are going.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they
do
can't...
You think...
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Johnny.
Do you think that Marvel is scared that DC are out-Marveling them with their new range of new age of heroes, when you've got someone like Sideways? If you've read it, is practically Spider-Man. The Terrifics are coming out next week, which is practically the Fantastic Four.
Oh, I've just read Damage. I just read the first two issues of Damage from DC, and if that's not the Red Hulk meets the regular Hulk, I don't know what is.
Tell me about it.
It was such a letdown, because I'm reading it and I'm like, didn't we read this 50 years ago in Incredible Hulk?
Yeah.
This is the exact same crap. It's the same 1 hour time limit that they have for the current Red Hulk. They didn't even change it to 2 hours or 90 minutes or anything. It's literally 1 hour, which is what General Ross has US Avengers.
I totally agree with you on this, because on the last DC podcast I did, we talked about Sideways, and I said, if you want to read a Spider-Man comic, go and buy Amazing Spider-Man, because you know what? That's been a decent read over the last few months. Don't pick up this, because this is
Sideways sucks.
It was just a half-assed version of Spider-Man.
Right. I like portals and I like teleportation, because, I mean, obviously I'm a Nightcrawler guy. But and I like Spider-Man a lot. But Sideways, it was just like, this is a knockoff. I would expect this from someone other than DC. It's low.
I'm disappointed.
Saying how we're trying to follow DC's model with trying to keep leadership or viewership. My thing about it is we have that in mind. I think Marvel has what DC's doing in mind, and they're trying to stay relevant with them. But if they keep looking out of the side of their eyes at what publishers and what other companies are doing, then they're going to absolutely lose track of what it means to be Marvel.
In
an evolving medium like comic books, you can't be the one saying, oh, well, what's Dark Horse doing? What's DC doing? What's Aftershock doing? You have to say, no, we're Marvel and we're going to do our own thing.
Yes.
And then the others follow suit, not the other way around.
Exactly. I think a comic book company, whether it be whomever, should have their own identity and be true to their values. And this is the problem. What are Marvel's values right now?
I don't know.
Because it's not...
Events?
It's not the Stan Lee Marvel anymore, is it?
No.
You've got,
and now it's all about, you know, Marvel's social justice warriors, and Marvel's doing events, and Marvel's doing this and that or the other. And honestly, I just want to read good stories. I want to read good, lasting stories from Marvel and look at it and say that was good and not worry about all this other stuff happening outside. So if Marvel can provide that for me, I'm in. But until they give me that, it's just more of the same. And I can get big tie-in books from Lion Forge with their Catalyst Prime books. I can get that with Aftershock or with, you know, even Xenoscope with their Grim Fairy Tales, right? If I want things like that, I can find it other places. But Marvel used to have their own identity, and that's what made them so good. That's what made them so lovable for so long, is because they had their own identity and they did their own thing. And now, I feel like you were saying, you know, it follows the cinematic universe, and they're trying to make this a big deal where they don't match each other exactly, but if you see a character in the movies, you have to see them in the books. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a Shuri or an Okoye spinoff from Black Panther here in the coming months, because they were such fan favorites. And by the way, side note, the movie is amazing. If you haven't seen it, please go see Black Panther. It's such a good movie, comic or otherwise.
So I guess I want to double down on what you just said, because I think I tweeted something like that the other night to you guys about, you know, with Marvel, just give me good creators on the characters that I love, and stop patting yourself on the back for rebooting your shit. You know, it drives me nuts. I just wanted to talk about, like, there's a tweet from C.B. Cebulski, who's the editor-in-chief of Marvel, who put out a tweet yesterday that said he was so excited for all the projects announced at Image Expo. Congrats to Image Comics and all the amazing creators with new books there. True talent drives this industry for all publishers, and 2018 is shaping up to be a simply incredible year of comics for us all. And, you know, that's great. I love that he complimented Image on the books that are coming out, but where are the books from Marvel that are coming out with great creators? You know, that's, to me, that's telling me, see, by Cebulski congratulating Image means that he's not congratulating Marvel. That's kind of how I took it.
But another thing that we could say about Cebulski is that he just kind of took the reins on Marvel. And so Legacy wasn't exactly his idea. I think that's something that they had kind of planned for a while. And this is, I think, Cebulski trying to do his own thing. It just happened way too close. Like, he's saying, oh, yeah, we're going in new directions, fresh takes, fresh start, whatever it was. And he's like, yeah, this is a whole new drill. But I think this is just him trying to make his mark and show that he means business, quote unquote. He's going to try to make things happen.
I'm absolutely, I would agree with you on that totally. I'm all right if someone wants to turn around and say, I'm new at the editor-in-chief, I want to make changes, I want it to be this, this, and this. And you know what? That's probably why he got the job, because he wanted to do this, this, and this. But unfortunately, one of the things you've got to do as editor-in-chief is think about the people who are buying your comic books. If you can't put out cohesive storylines that keep... it's less than a year. What is it, like 8 months or something since the last one? You know, it's like the universe doesn't need to be restarted. If you want to change your pace, fine. Change the pace. Change up the writings. Change the artist. Put, you know, a different book together. I don't care what it is. But don't go scrapping one just for the sake, because it's not your play. I didn't draft him, so therefore I'm not playing him. Fine. That's the case. Trade him. Don't bloody move the team. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The best way I can put it is that for the last, I want to say, year or two, I have been in a constant state of alienation. I just don't know where it's going. I don't feel comfortable in the Marvel skin, because every few months it just seems like they're just changing it. And so how does that go against the rest of the fan base? Because if I'm feeling this way, and I'm a Marvel lifer, how do they get new fans and keep them? if you know, if, unless this is such like an ADD society, that you know you have to change things up every 3 or 4 months for to stay relevant.
It is to an extent, but I think the movies also kind of play into that. You know, they're trying to change everything up with what people want in the here and the now. And it is true that the fans and comic readers, they're more willing to jump ship and jump on something new than stay with something for the long haul, because it's this instant gratification. Oh, well, you know, I want it now and then I'll move on. Like binge watching on Netflix, you know, everything can be consumed all at once, so that a month-to-month book is a little bit harder for people to commit to, at least in today. And, like, that's why trades are so popular, like I said. And we haven't had any original graphic novels in a while. Like, it used to be where, you know, they'd put out a graphic novel about, you know, God, Love, Man, Kills. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. And they had Avengers and, you know, Hulk. They had these graphic novels, and then they'd have their ongoing as well. And now it's like, well, you can get your trades, you can get your comics, you can get your movies, you can get it all at once. And if you're tired of it, they'll just scrap it and start again. So, like, you have a point, but I can see where they're coming from as well. And it's sad that I think that way, but I think that that's their business model now, and it sucks.
It's the millennial in you, Bob.
I'm a 90s kid. It's how I was raised, I guess.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Not at all. If you've got Marvel, all the comic companies that have been around for ages should be able to produce a product that caters to you, the millennial, and me, the dude that was born in the 70s. You know, and we should be able to get something out of our comic book reading experience. Dark Horse, for example, they've stayed true to form, even though they've lost license after license. You know, you can't knock the quality of Dark Horse books. They're not just a trade-off book. Dynamite Comics at the moment, they are putting out some really, really strong books, and not all of them are licensed books. You mentioned Aftershocks. Again, Aftershock have gone for their initial sort of, you know, twist in the tail type of story, and they hit a lull for a bit, and then they've picked back up again because they were happy to cement the place in the comic book industry before trying to take the next step. For me, Marvel are just chasing the diamond. It just doesn't work like that when you're talking about a creative product, because there's the readers to consider.
Right. Well, and that, you know, when it comes to readers, that's, I think, one of Marvel's downfalls is they're not giving anybody enough time to breathe in any character to find an audience. That's why everything is like pre-branded. That's why when they had to replace Thor, it was still Thor, but it was a different character. Same thing with Iron Man. Same thing when they did Superior Spider-Man. Different character, same brand. You know, you can't launch a mosaic anymore without and have it given enough time to find a fan base, you know, because if the things are, they're just canceling things after 4 issues. You need to give it, you know, and that's what I like about DC. At least DC kind of gives the characters a little room to breathe before they, you know, cancel something, you know.
Even they're making mistakes. I can't believe they're getting rid of Super Sons. That's just a stupid move.
Well, that was a great book. And I don't know why they're still publishing New Superman.
I don't understand why they're publishing Birds of Prey, but that's just a me thing. All right. there's a topic for a podcast, books that should be cancelled.
Yeah, hey, that'd be a long podcast.
That's
but
true.
We've, but yeah, like Mosaic doesn't have that branding, but you were saying like when they killed Wolverine, they had this, you know, Death of Wolverine event. And then Laura's like, well, I'm Wolverine, and now Wolverine's coming back. He says, well, what the hell's happening to Laura? Well, we're putting her on X-Men Red. We don't talk about her no more. She has Honey Badger. She has her own sidekick. Like, I mean, the branding is one thing, but
right.
I think good stories and good characters, like you were saying, Bud, I think that's the most important. Put good creators on good books, write good stories with good characters, and then let the market speak for itself.
Right. Let the fans talk. Let the fans
right.
tell you what you should be publishing. And
because we're not silent, we're just kind of ignored.
Right. You know, that's the thing, is the most vocal area of our fan base are the, you know, I think the people that are screaming about books that are being canceled, even though they're not buying them. So that's my biggest gripe about that. If you want a book to continue, buy it, please.
By that logic, if I want a book to get canceled, I wouldn't buy it, but that's not happening. Squirrel Girl.
Right.
Mockingbird. Right, okay, so one quick question then. With the new Marvel Fresh Start, do you think Marvel is still trying to retain the idea that they're being a diverse comic book universe out there?
No.
Or do you think they've just given up the ghost and they're just going for what they think is going to make them some moolah?
I think they've taken their licks, they've tried to learn their lesson, and they're still going to try to go in diverse directions where it's applicable, but they're not going to just push for it because, oh, now we have a lesbian Asian character with epilepsy or some dumb shit. Like, they're going to make characters that are good, and they're going to use what they have that works. But if a diverse character comes around, or if it works within what's in their direction, then I say they're going to go for it. But I think their whole, you know, I say social justice warrior almost as a joke, but all these people are saying that this diversity thing is a fad, and I don't think it is, but I do think it needs to be treated well. And I'm hoping that Marvel understands that after this whole, you know, the storm that they've been through with people upset about diversity or lack thereof.
Well, the thing is, Miles Morales is still in there, at least.
Oh, yeah, because he's an established character under the Spider-Man brand.
Yeah, and you've got, obviously, Black Panther on Avengers,
right.
which isn't a new thing. He's been an Avenger before. And then you found that Iron Man's back, so you've lost Riri Williams for a bit.
Doom.
Listen, what I think you'll find is a lot of these characters, the newer characters ending up on the Champions, and the old school back to basics characters are going to be on Avengers. You know, you're going to have that. That's the basic thing. When I saw that cover to Avengers number one, I was like, oh, we're back to basics here. We have Steve Rogers as Cap, Tony Stark as Iron Man, Thor, Odin's back as Thor,
and then we have a couple of throw-ins. Interesting people like Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange has been an Avenger off and on, and then
he used to be Defender.
Yeah, he was.
And so
was
Ghost Rider.
Yeah, well, Ghost Rider was in the Champions, the original Champions.
Bro, I'm sorry, I was thinking Hercules and the Champions, everybody. But yeah, if somebody wants a good diverse book for like millennial type people, Champions is your go-to. I love the Champions. I think, I mean, aside from a couple of missteps, Champions has been the book for people who want to read interesting stories with diverse characters that aren't the Avengers. And if you want to go, like I said, back to basics, I'm excited for this Avengers book because I love those creators. But you know, with Ed McGuinness and Jason Aaron, it'll be 5 issues and they'll be gone. And they'll have somebody else, because that's how it always happens.
That's what bugs me, that they sell us. Like, they kind of try to sell you on Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness, right? But you know it's just Jason Aaron, because there's no way Ed McGuinness can keep up the schedule, because Avengers is supposed to be published 19 times a year, and they're just not – he just can't keep up. He can't keep up on a 12-month schedule.
Yeah, I loved Amazing X-Men, and I was really excited to see that team go forward. That 5-issue arc after the first after the quest for Nightcrawler was over in Amazing X-Men, both of those were gone, and we got Kyle Yost and I forget their damn names right now, but it went to different creators and they were good stories. But I was sold on this creative team, and now it's like, well, they're gone, and people who wanted that creative team will drop off the book. Less than a half dozen issues.
Jim Chung on Marvel 2-in-1, 2 issues.
Yeah, that lasted a long time.
Yeah, I was like, come on, you know. And then it's not even like he's taking a break. He was just only hired to do the first 2 issues, and we were sold on that. So
I guess what we can say in closing about the whole Fresh Start is that Marvel, the ball's in your court, even easy for me to say. the ball's in your court. You've got some disenfranchised fans, some fans who absolutely love the characters, who love some of the creators that are getting involved. Prove us wrong. Make it last. Make it work.
Make mine Marvel.
Yeah, I think Johnny has said that beautifully. I want, like I said, give me the characters I love with the creators I like and good stories, and people will come back.
And
people will stay.
And Marvel, don't make it hard for us to defend you.
Damn right.
Like, I stick up for Marvel all the time. Oh yeah, it's coming. It's like being a Cowboys fan all over again. It's like, oh, this season's our season. It's gonna happen. But then if we keep getting let down, it makes it harder and harder to defend Marvel if they keep dropping the ball or keep misstepping. So like you were saying, you know, I'm really hoping for the best and that we can go in a good, proper direction. But don't make me regret it.
Yep. I championed the legacy renumbering, and now I feel foolish.
Right, because it was so short-lived. It's maybe not short-lived. They might continue aspects of it, but... might have jumped the gun.
Yep. <I did>.
All right. So I think that pretty much wraps up No Prize Podcast today.
All right. Yeah. So join us in a couple of weeks. I'm sure we'll be talking more about the Avengers crossover, No Surrender, as they have been really kind of spoiling the crap out of Bruce Banner coming back as the Hulk, and he'll be back by the next time we're on. So,
oh, for sure.
All right. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks, and thanks for listening.
All right.
Bye.
Bye and bam.
Visit UndercoverCapes.com for the latest and greatest podcasts via the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Also visit our parent company website, ComicCrusaders.com, all about comic pop culture.